Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
2024 is, by any stretch, a bumper year of elections, and it doesn't get much bigger than the world's largest democracy, India. Voting there began in April. It runs in seven phases. It finishes on June 1st. And India's current Prime Minister, the Hindu nationalist Narendra Modi, has been in power for a decade and is seeking a third term. For more on this, I'm joined here in the studio by the director, Ireland India Institute at DCU, where she lectures on Indian politics and foreign policy, Dr. Jivanta Shotley. You're very welcome. Thank you for coming in. And from Delhi, we're joined by freelance reporter Aisha Mitra. And Aisha, I'm going to come to you first, but not on politics, because I want to ask you about the heat wave. Firstly, in Delhi, where you are, there were reports here yesterday of 52 degree heat. It seems that that particular figure might be an error. Tell us what's been happening there.
Hi, Claire. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been very hot here in Delhi. We did have a short sprinkle yesterday, so we're hoping that temperatures will come down. But you're right, the 52 degree figure seems to be an error, which is what the Indian Meteorological Department has said. But just the day previous, temperatures were as high as 49.9 degrees Celsius. So it's definitely hovering around the 50 degree mark. And across northern India, we've seen temperatures cross the 50 degree mark. So it's fairly safe to say that India is quite literally burning.
Okay, and a very difficult time for people living through that.
Definitely. And with the elections underway, with people having to stand in queues to cast their vote, that's definitely been a big concern. And it's something that the Election Commission of India has also taken into account while organizing polls to ensure that people are, in fact, able to cast their vote despite the heat.
Well, that brings us to this election. And I want to talk about the very scale of it now. Can you talk us through the size of the electorate and then those seven phases that I mentioned?
Yeah, so there's about 969 million eligible voters in India that are going to be casting their vote this year. And about nearly 500 million of these are men and the rest are women. Interestingly, there's been more female voters that have registered this time around than male voters, which is a good sign for India's gender ratio. But just in terms of how long it takes to conduct polls of this scale, there has been voting taking place in India since the mid of April, and it'll only conclude on Saturday on June 1st. And then 3 days later is when the votes will be counted and the results will be announced.
Okay, well, let's come now to the studio and Dr. Jivanta Shotley, who is here with me. It's hard to get our heads around the scale of this, but in some ways it's comparable to, I suppose, the European elections right across the EU, where we have people campaigning amongst millions of voters in different languages and so on. But the turnout is higher than we will see in European countries.
Absolutely. And the turnout has remained quite high. I mean, I like to point out that we shouldn't forget India has been holding general elections since 1951-52. The first time after independence, and they decided to give a full adult franchise already with the first election. The turnout then was, of course, much lower, but they've managed to sustain between 55-60% over the last 17 rounds of elections, which is pretty astounding. Mm-hmm.
And in all of that time, relatively peaceful changes when it comes to results of those elections, when there is a change of government.
Change of government, peaceful acceptance of the transfer. And let's also say that this time around, there's also been, I think, overall a peaceful carrying out of the whole process of the election.
Mm-hmm. So this very complicated phasing of the votes, the long voting time, what sort of problems does that tend to throw up?
I suppose fatigue, perhaps, in terms of keeping up the interest of voters and of the public in the elections. What is fascinating from a sort of political scientist perspective is that you then can analyze the different waves and the different compositions, which is a very careful, complicated electoral calculation that they have to make depending on which state, which constituency, and all the complex societal demographic calculations. So it's an incredible exercise and opportunity for political scientists to observe. Mm-hmm. Of course, each phase is different, and it's I think you can see the local and regional issues coming up as the different phases are carried out.
Okay, and Aisha, something that Irish listeners will be interested in, those certainly who were here during our own controversy when it comes to electronic voting. You have electronic voting there, which is why the voting period is long, but the count is very short.
Yes, that's right. So we have electronic voting machines, and you have a symbol as well as the name of the candidate from each constituency on the voting machine. So you can just vote for example, the ruling party, the Janata Party, has a lotus symbol. So you press the button next to the lotus and your vote is cast, and you get a sort of a paper receipt to confirm that the vote that you have cast is the one that's been registered. But just to comment on the question of whether or not these elections have been peaceful, they have largely been so, but there's definitely been instances of voter suppression that has been reported. There has been instances we've seen where, for example, in certain areas, trains have been cancelled and voters from Muslim villages have not been able to make it to the polls. Or we've seen instances in the northeast Indian state of Manipur, which has been a restive province, where electronic voting machines have actually been hijacked and they've had to reconduct polls. So it's definitely something that varies depending on the local context and how tense the region itself is. Of course, with a country that's as large as India, you are going to have these instances that are taking place. But it is something that's been brought into question a lot, especially by opposition parties, as to whether or not electronic voting machines are reliable.
Okay, and I know there is a push from some to go back to the paper system, isn't there?
Yes, exactly. Prior to the elections commencing, there were petitions in India's Supreme Court to essentially ask the Election Commission of India to do just that. The Supreme Court said that, they did not want to intervene, and it was the Election Commission's decision. So we've stuck to the electronic voting machines. But there has been concern raised that the ruling party essentially could rig those in their favor. Thankfully, we have seen, polls carried out and a large voter turnout take place. But it's also, again, important to note that this time around, the turnout has been marginally lower than 2019 when the last general elections took place.
Okay. Now, Jovanta, I mentioned that Narendra Modi is going for a third term. What's your assessment on what the public verdict will be on him?
Well, the last opinion polls, I think, were done in February, March, and not more recently. That's not allowed during the voting phase. So those, I believe, were generally positive in believing that he will and the BJP will make a comeback. There were polls which also indicated dissatisfaction on various specific issues relating to unemployment, inflation, development issues. So it's not an absolute majority that was in these opinion polls saying he will definitely come back, but the overall sense is very positive and that they deserve to return in order to keep up with their promises.
Okay. Do you agree with that, Aisha, that is what was coming through in those last polls before the voting began?
Yeah, definitely. That seems to be the sentiment on the ground as well. The ruling party has constantly been saying that they want a super majority this time around, which is of 400 seats with their alliance, the National Democratic Alliance, out of 545 seats. But it looks like, at least for the moment, that while they might definitely form the government, they will not achieve that level of majority that they are hoping for.
That would be extraordinary, wouldn't it? 400 seats out of 545?
I mean, some people have been commenting that was actually a clever move of theirs to have that high sort of measure to aim for. And now everyone is saying, they might get 320, but that's certainly still pretty good. But they themselves had said, let's target 400. So some people think that was quite a clever move to begin with that.
And where do you say the biggest electoral threat to Modi is coming from, or is there one?
Well, the problem is there is an opposition alliance, the so-called India Alliance, which is an acronym. A lot of people have criticized it for being fragmented. They don't have a particular leader that they've put forward. But I mean, it's held through longer than perhaps people expected. And hopefully they'll also be stronger as a result of this election, because a democracy needs an opposition, a functioning opposition. But I don't think they represent a big enough threat.
So are you saying what we will see is the rest of those seats being held by a fragmented opposition?
across the whole country. But of course, within certain parts of the country, the BJP has not yet made strong enough inroads. That's, we'll have to see. But in the south of the country, they have not traditionally been strong. So there are very strong regional parties that will probably make a comeback.
Now, India's economic progress is often hailed as being remarkable. But who is benefiting from that, Jyvanta, and who's being left behind?
Again, difficult for a political scientist to give absolute answers to that, but probably the middle classes have benefited the most. And I mean, there are reports that inequality has skyrocketed. So not just the middle classes, but the upper echelons of the middle and upper classes have probably benefited the most. But of course, you know, a country with such a scale, such a size, the fact mobility is important. So there has definitely been more people coming into the urban centers. So even from the rural areas, people are coming into urbanized settings and getting more jobs, better salaries, but it's not enough. I mean, I think the reports say that India has to maintain its level of 7%, 8% growth for the next decade, at least, if it wants to truly uplift its whole population and achieve the status of a developed country in the next few years.
Aisha, we spoke about the peaceful handovers that have happened in the main in the past, but some critics I know of Narendra Modi have said that he is ramping up Islamophobic rhetoric, you know, saying that he was sent by God to bring India back to the glory days. Is there a sense or a fear that the election results could bring India to a point where there is violence?
So what we've seen in India over the last few years is that protests and demonstrations have actually reduced because there's such high fear of backlash that people don't feel safe enough to protest because they know that they'll be cracked down on by the police forces and the paramilitary forces. But that being said, you're right, there's definitely been a ramping up of Islamophobic rhetoric on the campaign trail by the Prime Minister himself. And this is something that, you know, opposition parties have been talking about for a while now, that he has been using divisive rhetoric in order to garner votes and essentially leaving the Muslim minority in India behind while doing so. And we've seen the government introduce several policies that are directly, you know, in favor of a Hindu nationalist country, of a Hindutva sort of country being formed as opposed to a constitutionally secular one, which India still is. So there's definitely that fear among the minority groups in India that if the current ruling party is re-elected, that this might sort of pose a death knell for a democratic secular India. And some critics have even gone as far as to say that this could be in many ways the last democratic election that India sees if the ruling party is re-elected.
Have you heard, Jyvanta, those fears expressed?
Yes, of course. That's very much in the media and one reads about it in the media. So even though there is concerns that freedom of media has reduced, but I think one has to acknowledge that it is still a very lively, vivacious media landscape in India. So these concerns and reports are reported and one can hear them debated on Indian television on multiple channels. I still wonder whether religion wins votes. Of course, whether it makes people fearful is another thing, but I don't think it wins votes. And I think there have been polls done of people's opinion and most, the majority of Indians are still believing in secularism and respect for other religions. So I don't think it can be a long-term.
Let's see what the results bring in the coming days. Thank you both for being with us. Aisha Mitra, who is in Delhi, and here in the studio, Dr. Jyvanta Shotley from DCU.